Hello and welcome to Vikings on the Clock, your premier source for Minnesota Vikings draft news, or at the very least speculation. I am your host, Kirby O'Connor, managing editor of purpleptsd.com and vikingsterritory.com, although I think I have a new title now. I think I might just be associate editor or something. Not really sure. Joe's a little confusing on titles. And joining me today is Grant Dahl, author of the Vike Minded Thoughts column on purpleptsd.com. How's it going today, Grant?
It's going great, Kirby. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have you on here. We always get into some real good discussion. We'll start this one off by talking recent signings of the offensive line. Just this week, we've had Brett Jones and Dakota Dozier signing, and along with the Josh Klein signing earlier in the offseason. I think this has some implications for how the Vikings are going to handle the draft coming up here in just a few weeks here. So I'll say my thoughts first, and I'll pass it over to you. I think the signing of Josh Klein obviously solidified the guard position, the starting guard position. It does leave a hole open on the other side for them to possibly bring in a rookie to fill that. But then when they signed Brett Jones and Dakota Dozier, I think they really showed their hand a little bit that they are not going to go heavy in the offensive lineman, at least in the guard position in the draft. Maybe as heavy as some fans thought they would, because I think a lot of people were thinking they're going to go 3 to 4 offensive linemen, couple of guards, tackle or two, maybe even a center. But now I think with the signings, they're depth signings, but I think they've shown that other than maybe the first couple rounds, I don't think they're willing the first couple of rounds and maybe a depth or two, you know, flyer pick, I don't think they're going to be going super heavy on the offensive line. Grant, I just wanted to get your thoughts in here to see, you know, what you think of the signings, what you think of Brett Jones and Dakota Dozier. I know Jones has got a little bit of versatility to play center and guard. But yeah, just hop in and tell me what you think about these signings and what it means for the draft.
Well, I would agree with you in the sense that these definitely look like depth signings. I'm not positive about starting. I know that there have been some concerns raised about, like, Josh Klein apparently does not strike people as a blocker who would work well in the zone blocking system, which apparently our new offensive line coach, Rick Dennison, is looking to implement. So I do definitely look at them as depth. Of the three, I think the one who's probably got the best chance to start is going to be Jones. And I was actually surprised last year when we had Jones on the roster when Tom Compton was really struggling. I was very surprised Jones did not get a chance to start over Compton when Compton was still healthy, because obviously, as we saw, Compton was struggling a lot last season in keeping blockers at bay or keeping defensive players at bay. So I definitely think that it cuts back the It cuts back the urgency of the need to draft on the offensive line, of the amount of picks that they need to draft on the offensive line, because I think Spielman is looking at this draft, and there are certain elements on defense that I think he and Zimmer might be just salivating over in terms of just, you know, their chances to get some of these guys, and I think that may be playing some role in there. That said, I also think that they know that they can't ignore the offensive line in the early rounds. I would still be stunned if we did not use a first round pick on a lineman in some way. I think you're definitely right that they're not going to go whole hog on the offensive line. We're not going to spend 60% of our picks on the offensive line. I would be very shocked if we went that heavy after these signings, because I mean, all three of these guys that you mentioned, Klein, Dozier, and Jones, they all have limitations in some way. And there's a reason why teams didn't bring them back to keep starting, but you know, they definitely have starting experience. That's usually what you want to find in depth signings. And I think that was primarily what those signings were for. I still expect them to draft a guard or two. I think they're going to give Danny Isadora a really good shot to start this year, because Isadora actually did play fairly well last season, I thought. And I know Latavius Murray credited Isadora with some really good blocking in a couple games. But yeah, I think it's safe to say that we're probably going to see two, maybe three, if they're stretched, four linemen picked. But it's not going to be they're not going to be drafting five or more. They're going to be very careful about those picks. Spielman's been bit by reaching a few too many times here the last couple of years. I think he's a little tired of that. And I think he's going to be trying to restrict himself to the best available player while still trying to fill needs. And after the first and second round on the offensive line, that gets harder to do. So that would be my perspective on that. And I guess, in short, I agree with you in many different ways about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think these signings change a lot of things as far as the draft is concerned, because you're not you don't have to go, I've been saying this a lot, but you don't have to go offensive lineman at 18. I don't think these change that one, but you don't have to go offensive lineman in the third and fourth round where you're looking for for Spielman has been looking for his starting offensive line in those positions. I've written about that before. Pat Elflein, various other picks that didn't work out, Willie Beavers. I think in the third and fourth, you're not going offensive line. You can pick up a very good defensive player who has slid, because this is a deep defensive draft. But talking about things that people that they won't draft, there was another signing this week that, well, just today that came out. Sean Mannion just signed, as you know, the third quarterback on the roster. So you've got Cousins, Slaughter, and Mannion all here to play quarterback. So I think that takes away some of the things that we've talked about. You know, I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback at all now. I'll pass it back over to you, because I think you have some thoughts about what their strategy is going to be as far as bringing in another quarterback. But I don't think they're going to go with a draft pick towards a quarterback at all now, which is maybe good, maybe bad if you want to find the real heir apparent to Cousins. But I think they don't need to make a depth signing pick in the sixth or seventh round anymore.
I would agree with that assessment. The Mannion signing basically tells us that they're not looking to the future just yet. I think that we know that they have met with a couple of quarterbacks. I know there's been talk, I believe I mentioned this in a previous conversation, that there's been talk that there are members inside the Vikings organization who are not sold on Kyle Slaughter and things of that nature. I think that they are high enough on Slaughter. I mean, they haven't been giving Slaughter 1-year contracts. They've been signing him to multi-year deals lately, which tells me that I think they see that this guy has a future of some kind, whether that's as a starter or as a backup. I think we're still going to find that out. But I definitely think that, you know, in terms of this year, it definitely is not going to be I would be stunned if we drafted a quarterback at any point this year. We have way too many needs in other parts of the team that need to be addressed, which we can find players who can step up and at least play a rotational or situational role. And when you draft a quarterback, that guy generally has to sit for a year or two. So he's taken up a roster spot, not doing much except sitting and learning the playbook. So I look at that and I say to myself, you know, it's like, we're not, I would be stunned if they did that. I know that in the past, the Vikings have usually brought in a fourth quarterback to compete in training camp, and it's usually been an undrafted free agent. So I would not be surprised if they brought in an undrafted free agent again to kind of be the fourth quarterback on the roster, you know, during training camp, and just throw him in there, see what comes of him and stuff like that. But I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback. I think more that some of these conversations that they had with quarterbacks this year might have been prepping them for next year, when I I believe they're going to be looking at drafting Kirk Cousins' heir apparent, because I don't think Kirk Cousins re-signs with this team after his 3-year deal's out. I think at that point, the Vikings aren't going to want him back, because they're going to look at his age and they're going to say, we got to, you know, reboot here. You know, a lot of the other players are going to be at the tail end of their contracts by that point. And it's just going to make more sense to draft a guy and develop him at that point and develop Cousins' heir at that point. So, yeah, I would definitely agree. We're not going to – I would be very surprised if we drafted a quarterback this year.
Yeah, and we've discussed the Cousins situation ad nauseum, you know, but I think it's interesting as a Vikings fan who's been around a decent amount of time, but not long enough to know when we really had a franchise quarterback. It's interesting to go into a year and know that you've got a guy, barring injury, that's going to start all 16 games, and there's not going to be any controversy at all that he's your guy. And I just thought of that, you know. A lot of years we would be talking, we would, as fans, talk about, well, who are we going to draft? Are we going to go quarterback in the first round to get rid of, you know, Ponder, or just solidify the position in some manner? And usually it was journeyman, free agent, or Christian Ponder. Tavares Jackson, Brett Favre, but Favre is one of the high spots. It's interesting to me, this is a side note from the draft, but to see a team that has their guy, and especially with the bad luck of Teddy Bridgewater's knee and Sam Bradford's knees, plural, it's interesting to see a guy that you know is going to start all 16 games for more than likely. Just a side note of Vikings fandom.
Yeah, it is surprising. And, you know, we did have, I still consider Dante Culpepper one of the franchise quarterbacks in our history. Of course, he got hit with the bad luck bug as well, just like Bridgewater did. But yeah, you're right. It is kind of unique to go into a season and know that barring injury or a catastrophic meltdown, you're going to have, you know, who your guy is going to be. It's all on that guy for the season. So yeah, it's not a situation Vikings fans have generally been in the past. So yeah, you're right. It makes it very interesting.
And I think that makes it really good. We can now draft for some of the other needs and not worry about that quarterback spot as much. And we'll get into, I'm sure we'll rehash the offensive lineman, what we're going to do in the first round debate on future shows before the draft. But I'm gonna step away from that now, because we're going to try to cover a little bit more the back end of the draft. And one of the things that we wanted to talk about today is the possibility of, since you have those guard depth signings, you've given yourself a little bit more flexibility in that second and third round. If Blake Cashman is available in the second round, or even in the third round, if he falls that far somehow, if you trade back into the second, however it works out, if he's available and the Vikings take him, you had an idea of where he would fit into this roster. So I'll just hand it back over to you to tell the idea that you had where he would fit in that linebacking core.
Okay. Well, I mean, Cashman, when I looked over his game tape, I mean, the guy that Cashman reminded me of, believe it or not, was London Fletcher, the longtime Rams and Redskins star linebacker, because he plays with a similar kind of chip on his shoulder and just passion for the game. And when I looked at the Vikings linebacking core, I was like, I thought that he could really fit this team very well in two spots in particular. The primary one, as of right now, because I know Zimmer usually likes to have players, you know, gradually learn the defense and how it works. But the primary spot where I could see him fitting right now is a spot where we've had a hidden weakness the past couple of years on defense. And I'm a little surprised that it hasn't gotten more press, because it's very obvious when you look at it. When we drafted Eric Kendricks, I mean, he brought a whole new attitude to this defense. And when you look at Vikings game tape, when Kendricks has to miss time for injury and stuff like that, the Vikings defense tends to struggle more. And, I mean, obviously there may be multiple reasons for that. I mean, Kendricks does play a very a multifaceted role in terms of, I think he's the guy who receives the defensive signals and progresses them to everybody else on the field and stuff like that. But Kendricks is also, he's the general in that back seven, you know, where he kind of makes the calls as to what's going to go here, what's going to go there. He makes sure Zimmer's calls are followed to the letter, you know, in terms of what package do we show here? How do we confuse the quarterback? And we don't really have that, we don't really have that swagger and that, you know, rock hard, you know, ability when he seems to miss time. I mean, obviously we've had other players who've tried to fill that role. I know Kentrell Brothers has tried to fill that role. Eric Wilson has tried to fill that role, but they don't seem to quite fill it the way that Kendricks does. Mm-hmm. And I think Cashman would really fit into that role of being Kendricks' primary backup. And I think he'd be able to do it in such a way that we would not see the drop off if Kendricks has to miss time for injury. Mm-hmm. And so I think that would be where Cashman would have the greatest advantage in joining the Vikings, how he would be the greatest, how he would contribute the best. Because, you know, it's like, how is Zimmer's defense going to keep up if Kendricks suddenly suffers an injury like Harrison Smith had a couple years ago, where, you know, he had to miss 8 games? You know, it's like our defense is really not going to look that good. And this team lives and dies on how well its defense plays. So, you know, finding the guy who can step up and take a Kendricks place if Kendricks does suffer, you know, injury is really important. And I think Cashman would fill that role very well. Now, in terms of, you know, what role could he play on defense while Kendricks is healthy? I actually have some opinions there, too. I do think Ben Gedeon has done a pretty good job considering he came in as a rookie and got to start in this defense. But there were times last year that we saw where Gedeon did not really step up to the way that we expected. And I don't think he played at the level that Zimmer really wanted to see. And for all the talk Zimmer gives, you know, trying to push Xavier Rhodes, you know, it's like, I'm willing to bet he's probably had some talks with Ben Gedeon too, because Gedeon is not very good in coverage. I mean, obviously he's the first guy to go out when they go to 3 defensive backs, but you know, he doesn't really cover the tight end well. He's got some limitations. Mm-hmm. And I think Cashman could really, I think Cashman would be a good step up if he's ready to take in all the quirks that a Zimmer defense would produce. I think Cashman could step in and take over for Gedeon in our starting lineup. And he could be the guy that we move inside to take Kendricks' place when Kendricks basically goes out with injury or has to take a breather or something like that. So that would be my thought there, because Cashman, I think Cashman's a really good talent. And I think because of, and you know, and you mentioned second or third round, I think there's a pretty good possibility Cashman does slide to the third round because of how many, because like I said, this draft is really full of good defensive players. And I mean, and Cashman has kind of always had to work from the ground up, and I think that it's going to be the same here. You know, it's like he's going to go higher than initially expected, but I would be very surprised if he went second round because of how many other players he's having to compete with who are really good.
Yeah, I think you mentioned very early on that point that Eric Kendricks is the guy who calls the calls the signals for the, you know, the linebackers and kind of the offensive line a little bit. I think him and Harrison Smith are the two on the defense who do that. They call things back and forth for the offensive line and the defensive backs. And I think to have an actual person who's learning that behind them, who's kind of becoming that leader, I think that fits into the Zimmer philosophy so well that I don't know why it hasn't happened before, but I suppose they've been able to rely on Kendricks to start most every game, but last year I think it did show, I guess looking at Kendricks, he has missed time every, no, that's not right. That's his college one. That's weird. Sorry, trying to look up stats on Eric Kendricks, and for some reason it pulled up his college stats, not his NFL stats. Interesting quirk. Okay, back to my point. Kendricks missed time last year, and that was kind of a significant thing that we saw. And with Anthony Barr going down as well, and having Eric Wilson to play Anthony Barr's spot, and then, like you said, Kentrell Brothers in there, and Gideon's in there all the time now. I think having a very talented high tier guy in there to spell them. Spell pretty much all the spots like Cashman could do, because Cashman, if you look at his tape, he has the ability to come down and play a hard-nosed middle linebacker, but he also has the ability and the athleticism to play on the outside as well if need be. I think just he fits too well in the system for me to think that they're not at least giving a very, very serious look at him at the third round, if not like I said, the second round. But I think another name that we're gonna throw out in this discussion is actually a later round pick, a sixth or seventh round pick, I think, is what he was projected as. Emeka Egbuehl out of University of Houston. I wrote an article about him, and I said that you could essentially have Anthony Barr for a sixth-round pick just with lower football intelligence and less instincts for the game right now. He's very raw, but he's very athletic. I think seeing a couple of those depth picks at linebacker would not be surprising in any manner in this draft. Cashman is my first one that I want, but to see Egbuehl in the sixth or seventh round, that would be get me very excited just because of what he could bring in potential. Kind of like how Jayron Kearse was drafted for his size and his athletic ability and not really as his technical skills as a safety. Egbuehl would be the same kind of player at linebacker who's got the raw talent, the raw athleticism and ability potential to play like an Anthony Barr, even though he's a sixth round pick. So that's the name that I want to throw out there, and actually a name that you gave me. So if you want to say anything about Egbuehl, I'll throw it back over to you, just because I love the guy. I think he's really an exciting player if you can just get him to get his head around the game a little more.
And you know, just to throw this out in support of that of your belief there, I mean, a lot of times, you know, these late round flyers are the kind with who have the traits, they just need them to be properly formed. Those are the kind of guys that Zimmer and Spielman have really been going for in the later rounds these last several years. So I think that's a point in your favor, that I think Egbuehl could really be one of those guys that they look at seriously in the sixth round, because let's look at the past. I mean, Everson Griffin, Danielle Hunter, Jayron Kearse, you mentioned. I know there have been a couple others, late rounders that we've looked at on defense, we've gotten them, we've let them develop for a year or two, and then all of a sudden they come out and they're producing as really good players, and I think Egbuehl does fit that same list of traits that they see or that they look for, in those later round players. And, it's very interesting that you say that, because another point to back that up, Zimmer hasn't stated it recently, but I believe it was at the end of training camp last year, Zimmer did voice concern over the depth at linebacker. And I think he also had concerns as to how well some of these guys were adapting to the system. And it would not surprise me in the least if he might be, let's put it this way. If they were to draft Cashman and Egbuehl, that would not surprise me in the least, because it would tell me that Zimmer's looking at his defensive backfield and saying, okay, I'm pretty well stocked there. He's been looking at his defensive line. Yeah, I'm pretty well stocked there too. So now he just needs to really well stock the linebacking core, because, it's like, let's face it. when Barr and Kendricks are on the field, our defense plays very, very well. But when they've had to miss time, they've, you know, we've had struggles in certain aspects. And, you know, if we were to develop a guy who could fill the same kind of role that Barr does in Egbele, I mean, that would be huge for us. I mean, it would actually enable us if Barr were to suddenly, you know, hopefully this never happens, but let's say Barr were to suddenly suffer an injury and he's no longer as effective as he used to be, you know, well, he's going to be getting some pretty high money, you know, in the next couple of years. You know, we would be able to offload that, you know, and we'd have Egbele sitting back there ready to step up, you know, if that scenario were to unfold. Again, I hope that doesn't happen. I hope we have Barr for the rest of his career, or at least most of his career, and he ends as a, you know, Hall of Famer for the Vikings. But, you know, it's like, but you have to hedge your bets. And that was something that came back to bite the Vikings with, as you mentioned, in one of our, you know, just previously, Teddy Bridgewater, that came to bite us because, you know, we didn't have a good, competent quarterback ready, or we didn't have a good, competent quarterback who could stand up for 16 games, who could step up and, you know, take Bridgewater's place. Hence, we had to go off and trade for Sam Bradford. And we don't really want to do that again. We want to have a guy who can step up and play a position, who can really just fill the role better and just be, you know, and just be ready to step up and keep the defense playing at the high level that it always has. Now, you know, for this upcoming year, you know, if we were to draft Egbele, you know, he's very raw. So I would be very surprised if Egbele were to, I don't think he would do well if he was called upon to start right away, but you give him a year in the defense, you give him a year there and maybe, you know, go through another training camp and then just see how he starts to develop. And maybe he picks up the system enough so that he can then rotate in and maybe start spelling Barr a little bit, you know, so that way we have more fresh bodies as well. Cause that's another trait of the Zimmer defense, is that Zimmer loves to basically rotate players in and out so that everybody's fresh. I mean, he does it primarily on the defensive line, but I've seen him do it in the secondary, and I believe he's done it with the linebackers at times when they're in situations where the linebackers won't be under a ton of pressure and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that I know, so that would be my personal perspective on that. I think he'd be a great pick. I think that he would be a guy who could contribute down the road if he put his mind to it. And, you know, I mean, can you imagine, you know, just, I'm just going to close with this on this particular topic. We heard Zimmer say when it came to re-signing Barr, the reason that they wanted Barr back so badly was because he said offenses have to game plan around this guy. Can you imagine if they had to game plan for Barr and Egbele, you know, in 2-3 years? I mean, talk about an offensive nightmare. I mean, Aaron Rodgers would be having nightmares over these guys, you know, yeah. Not to mention Matthew Stafford and Mitchell Trubisky and whoever else we end up playing.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about the idea of possibly two Anthony Barr level athletes coming at you. Because could you imagine trying to figure out who's running the blitz at that point? Because if you guess wrong, the other one's got a free run at you.
Yeah, no, it would be nuts, and it's this, and that's, and you know, is like, and it would be just another side to a Zimmer defense that already gives offenses and nightmares enough. You know, it's like I mean, let's face it, Zimmer's a defensive genius, and you know, you put enough toys in his arsenal. And, you know, he can put some pretty ferocious games together. I think 2017, that showed us in a major way how that could happen. I mean, if you remember, like, the games against the Rams and stuff like that. I mean, the Rams were being talked about at that point as being one of the best offenses in NFL history. And we cut them down to 7 points, you know. So, I mean, if we were to have more toys in that arsenal, I mean, there's no telling how many people we could shut down.
Yeah, and just to think about the fact that, you know, I've received some interesting comments on posts about guys in the sixth and seventh round, guys who you're essentially taking flyers on, and somebody's like, the comment is usually, well, can he play guard, but I think you think about the value that you would be getting from a sixth and seventh round pick if you take a guy like Egbele and he works out to be very similar to Anthony Barr. You've just spent a sixth round pick on a first round talent, first or second round talent. That's I find it interesting when we get comments that are basically, well, does he fill a need, especially for late round picks? That's all I'll say, so I don't alienate more of our readers and commenters, but I find it interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is interesting, and I think what it boils down to is that, I mean, some people just have to realize, this is all I'm going to say on this, some people just have to realize that when you get into the later rounds, the chances that you're going to get a starter are very, very small. The later rounds, probably fifth round and later, those are generally where you find the depth players. That's and the guys who are in need of development. That's where you find them. So that's and so it's just one of those aspects of reality that just has to be understood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so to transition from that linebacker conversation, I think we're gonna I'll skip ahead just one topic and we'll come back to the other one, but. Just to move forward into the defensive line, we both talked about this, the idea of picking up the heir to Linval Joseph as our three technique. Three technique? Yeah, I think that's the right one. Defensive tackle. And because Joseph is going to be 31 in October, he's not getting any younger. You know, he's been dominant for sure. I think a couple of years ago he was definitely the best defensive tackle in football. Now with Aaron Donald, he's still up there, but he's not probably the best anymore. But I think this year's draft, with how deep it is on the defensive line, just in general in the defense as a whole, I think you can find some really good picks to give you that guy who can become the new Linval Joseph, and I'll throw out the name that I wrote a profile about was Tristan Hill out of UCF. When he was on the field, he was a monster. He just brought all the energy. He played the same. He played the same kind of position that Joseph does in the Vikings line. So he would fit. The only question of him is quote unquote character questions. But I think he didn't mesh well with the new coaching staff that UCF brought in the last year. I think he got in the coach's doghouse early, and he ended up being the backup, even though he was the starter for 2 years in a row, and then he declared after his junior year because I think he said he was done with it. So he's going to be a mid-round pick now when he has the ability to be a first-round talent. I think he's going to be very similar to how Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter were steals in their drafts. I think he's very similar position to become the best defensive lineman in this draft, or, you know, up there, even though he's a fourth, fifth round pick. So Tristan Hill is the one I'll throw out. You've got a couple here that I think you wanted to talk about, the heir to Linval Joseph.
Yeah, I see a lot of the same things that you did in Tristan Hill, and I think that he would definitely be... I think he has a great potential to follow in Griffin and Hunter's footsteps as being a mid-round development that could really pay dividends for this team down the road. And you're right. I mean, Linval Joseph, he's still playing very effective, but we don't want to. The Vikings don't want to get stuck in the situation that they did late in the Childress Frazier era, where when Pat Williams suddenly walked away from the game, we didn't have anybody to fill that role. And the role that Joseph plays, just to clarify, is nose tackle. So, which is basically he holds down, he anchors the line, and lets the other three guys do their job. And so he basically eats up the blockers, keeps them off the linebackers, and just lets the other three guys do what they need to do. So, but Tristan Hill, yes, he definitely has the smarts. He definitely has the talents to really be a force at nose tackle. And, you know, seeing him alongside a Jaleel Johnson or a Jalen Holmes or even Shamar Stephan, you know, that would that would be a really good sight to see. And it would, and I think that, and I think it would be good to bring him in, and because Andre Patterson has done, our defensive line coach has done such a great job developing these defensive linemen. I mean, obviously everyone talks about Griffin and Hunter, but let's not forget some of the other guys we have on there. I mean, Shamar Stephan was a 7th round pick. Okay, look where he is now. You know, it's like we're talking about him as being the potential starter alongside Linval Joseph. Jaleel Johnson and Jalen Holmes, if you looked at game tape of them last year, they were actually starting to look really good. Jaleel Johnson was actually reminding me of Sharif Floyd. So Patterson has every ability to be able to turn these guys into really good players, and I think he could do that with Hill. Now, the other two guys that I just want to throw their names out here because, you know, it's like if they were to be in position for the Vikings to pick them up, I think that and you know, basically in a position where we wouldn't normally expect them, I think that the Vikings would be, I think the Vikings would be well advised to give them a serious look, even if they don't end up bringing them in. The first one that just crossed my mind, just looking at him, Dexter Lawrence from Clemson. Now he's being talked about as a 1st or 2nd round pick, but if he slides into the 2nd round. And if he's there when the Vikings are drafting in the 2nd round, and we've already addressed a need on the offensive line there, I have to look at that and say to myself, you know, it's like I think it might be a good idea to spend a draft pick on him because Lawrence already has a lot of things developed, which are very similar to what the skills Joseph has. And so Patterson could basically develop them to be an even better player, to be an even better anchor. And the other side to it is, too, is Lawrence, the big thing with Lawrence that I keep hearing everybody rave about is the way he plays against the run. Now, if we look back on Zimmer's defense, what's the one complaint that Zimmer usually has with his defense? It's usually their ability to stop the run. Now, their ability to stop the run is there, but it's not always consistent. And I think that Zimmer would be extremely happy if he had a guy who was already a big, you know, big on run stuffing, it like Lawrence, if he was able to add him to the line and work him into the rotation and groom him as Joseph's heir, that would be, you know, I think Zimmer would look at Spielman and just say, you know what, Rick? He's like, thank you very, very much. So, you know, it's like, so that would be another prospect to throw out there. I don't know if Lawrence is going to fall that far into the 2nd round. The fact that he's a nose tackle makes it possible because usually teams will spend 1st round picks on defensive linemen who are flashy players, you know, who are the players who get a lot of sacks, you know, the Warren Sapps and Leroy Glovers and stuff like that. You know, it's like they usually don't spend them on a nose tackle, but still Lawrence is coming off a defensive line in Clemson that's gotten rave reviews across the NFL for how good they are. So I would not rule it out that, you know, he's probably gone by the time the Vikings pick him. And just the third name that I'm just going to throw out here, this guy sounds like he's going to end up being undrafted just because he's got a couple things, like he's undersized. He's not flashy or anything like that, but he seems to be a blue-collar type player, you know, the guy who really, really works hard, and you tell him what to do, and he'll work at it, and he'll get it done. And that's Ray Smith from Boston College. I watched some footage of him. I was impressed with how stout he is at the point of attack. He eats up blockers. He is undersized, which means if you pair him against some offensive linemen who are much, much bigger than he is, you know, there's a chance he could get overpowered. But he still held up very well. I didn't see any major issues with him. And you know, I think he needs to be developed more. And I don't think that he could step into the defensive line rotation right away. Well, basically, let's put it this way. If the Vikings were to bring Smith in, I think he would be more of a rotation player, kind of the backup nose tackle, the guy who would come in to spell, you know, Joseph or whoever Joseph's heir apparent that nose tackle is going to end up being. And he won't be getting into that situation until probably after a year or two on the practice squad, because I think he could use some more development. But, you know, if Smith is not drafted, if he's still sitting out there on the undrafted, in the undrafted free agent pool after the draft, I think the Vikings would be well advised to bring Smith in and to just see what he can do, because, you know, like we were talking earlier, depth, that's what Zimmer prides on that defense. He likes having depth of a lot of players who can play well, and I think Smith could possibly fill that role, definitely. So I think it's very likely. So to sum up, I think it's very likely the Vikings will be looking for a potential heir to Linval Joseph in this draft. And, you know, the three that I see right now are the names we mentioned, Lawrence, Hill, and Smith. I think those are the guys that to keep an eye on. I think those are guys the Vikings probably have their eyes on. And it'll depend on how the draft shakes out and where each of those players, you know, are sitting when the Vikings are able to come pick them up. Because, again, I don't see the Vikings spending a first-round pick on a nose tackle. I have a hard time seeing them go defensive line in the second round unless it's a first-rounder who's just, for some reason, he's a superb talent who just dropped that far and stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting in the long run, but I think this is a position we could definitely see filled.
Yeah, I think for sure. The one you mentioned how well the Vikings have drafted in the later rounds to bring in their defensive lineman. The one name that you didn't mention that I'll throw out there now because everybody was so impressed with him last year is Steven Weatherly. When Griffin was out with his mental health issues, Weatherly played such a big role. He didn't get to the quarterback maybe as much as Griffin did, but I think he showed that he would be able to play a very solid defensive end when Griffin is out. You know, he's been able to spell very well. So I think just another point of how well the Vikings have drafted for depth on the defense. Maybe like where other teams are drafting depth on the defensive line, we're drafting players who are starter caliber, who become starter caliber players. And that's why I think guys like Tristan Hill or Ray Smith, those undrafted guys, give you so much flexibility to get them and then build them into what you want to. Just another point on that. And talking about depth on the defensive side, another move that was made this week was the Vikings signed two of the players from the now-dissolved Alliance of American Football. Rest in peace, AAF. They didn't make it very long.
No, they didn't.
But the two guys they picked up, safety Darren Smith and cornerback Duke Johnson, both of these guys, you know, they're not young necessarily. I think Thomas is younger because he came out in 2016. Oh, no, I guess they're both about the same age. Either way, I think they're both depth signings, but it's indicative of what the Vikings kind of do in the defensive backfield other than their starters. You know, obviously they've spent first and second round picks on defensive backs, although I saw a stat and I can't talk to the validity of this, but I think it was something like somebody tallied the number of first and second round picks in the last, I think it's 5 years for NFC North teams on defensive backs, or maybe it's cornerback specifically. And I think the Vikings had, would have been four. And then the Packers had something like nine. And the Bears and Lions had each like four or five, whatever. It doesn't matter. Basically, this narrative of the Vikings spend all their high draft picks on defensive backs, the fact is they don't spend more than other teams. They just do a better job of developing those guys, I think. And talking about a few depth options that go undrafted or in the late rounds, we've got a couple here. Mike Bell, the safety out of Fresno State, I wrote about him. He's a physical specimen. Got really good ball skills. He just needs to learn how to play. He needs to learn how to play the run a little better, and he gets a little bit lost with the eye movement. But I think you also had a couple guys that you wanted to talk about. So I'll throw it back over to you with the point that just there's a good possibility that they draft or they pick up some undrafted free agent defensive backs. And also I wanted to state that I don't think the Vikings draft defensive backs, more defensive backs higher than other teams.
Yeah, I do have a couple people in mind here. I don't think the Vikings are we're not going to see a repeat of last year where they suddenly go Mike Hughes in the first round. That would be a big time stunner if they did that in the first, second, or even third round, because I mean, we look at what we have back there at the cornerback spot. We've got four guys who a lot of, I believe I said this in a previous conversation. We have four guys who people have said, a lot of fans and pundits have said, would start for almost any team in the league. I mean, Rhodes and Waynes would probably start for any team in the league. I think Hughes would have started for a ton of teams. Alexander apparently was inquired about trade-wise as being a starter for another team. You know, and I know we've mentioned, I mean, I know it just came out this, our fifth corner, Holton Hill, he's going to start the season suspended. But, I mean, let's face it, when he was on the field, he still played very, very well, too. And some people said that even he would have started for some teams. So, I mean, so we have a talent for developing good defensive backs. It sometimes takes a while. You know, for example, Waynes and Alexander, they took a while to develop into the kind of players Zimmer wanted them to be, but we were able to do that, and I think that we're okay there. But, I mean, that being said, you know, we have a need at safety now because, I mean, Sendejo's gone. We kind of all saw that coming because, I mean, he was old, he was getting injured a lot, and he was becoming a target for the refs' penalties. I mean, refs seemed to be flagging him for things that they shouldn't have been. Recently. And, you know, we also lost George Iloka. Apparently he didn't fit Zimmer's system as well anymore as he used to. And, you know, so, I mean, so basically just in scanning over there, I mean, we're probably going to be looking later in the draft for some of these people to turn out. I mean, obviously you mentioned Mike Bell from Fresno State. He's certainly a possibility. I think if he slides into the early sixth, we might look at him very seriously. Some other names, I don't know if the Vikings have met with these guys. I actually kind of doubt it. But one guy who caught my eye just early was safety Lucas Dennis from Boston College. And the reason he caught my eye was because the way he plays the game is very similar to how Jayron Kearse does. And we drafted Kearse as a seventh-round pick a couple of years ago. And he seems like he's the kind of guy who can play that hybrid safety corner position that Kearse did. He's very raw. He's got a lot of development that he needs to come up with. And he looks like he could be good playing as a slot safety, basically the safety who covers the slot. Because people have expressed concerns that he can't really do the middle of the field stuff as well as some people, because he's got some ceiling there where that's limited. But, you know, you put him in the slot, you know, from what I've been hearing from people, they've been like, you know, like if you were to keep him in the slot and develop him well, he might actually turn into something. So that would definitely be a guy that I could see the Vikings taking a flyer on in the seventh round. I mean, seventh round picks are usually low risk. You know, it's like you have to release a seventh round pick. Big deal. It's not the end of the world. But, you know, moving on from him, though, once we start getting into the undrafted prospects, we come across a guy who's actually he's a native Minnesotan, and he was a star safety at the Division II powerhouse at North Dakota State, and that's Robbie Grimsley. Now, I watched some of the game tape on Grimsley, and I had to admit, the guy has a lot of tangibles. He's got a lot of abilities that you look for in a safety. For example, when you see him hit, I mean, Grimsley is a savage hitter. I mean, like, there were times where I looked at him and I was like, wow, it was like, that looked like Robert Griffith or John Lynch. You know, the way that he plays there. But the reason that Grimsley is not considered draftable, though, is because also as I was watching, I saw that he also, because he came so fast, he had a tendency to miss tackles. And he also seemed to struggle to recognize gaps for blitzing when he got sent through the offensive line. It seemed like he'd start to blitz, and then, boom, he ran into an offensive lineman. And it's like, you know, it's like you need to find a better way to do that. You know, it's like you need to recognize the gaps better. So I'm not saying that Grimsley is a first-round talent or anything like that. I don't think that he's at that level just now. But, you know, but I look at him and I see that – I see a guy who, you know, it's like I think he could fill the same kind of role that Harrison Smith does. And let's face it, Harrison Smith doesn't have a backup. And Smith has missed time in the past. I think a couple of years ago, we missed him for like 8 games, and our defense suffered as a result. So, you know, we talked earlier about how, you know, how essential Kendricks was to the defense, you know, and how missing him was so detrimental. You know, Smith is kind of the same way, especially in that secondary. He's the field general for the secondary, and he also brings he brings an added element to Zimmer's defense, you know, with the blitzing safety and all that, that, you know, really gives Zimmer a lot of options when it comes to dialing up pressure packages. And I could definitely see the Vikings bringing in this guy, Grimsley. That I could definitely see him bringing him in. I could see them sitting him, you know, basically on the inactive list on the regular roster for a while and saying, just eat up everything that Harrison does. Watch everything he does, learn from him, eat up everything we're teaching. It's like, and you could turn into a poor man's version of Harrison Smith. That's what I see in Robbie Grimsley. I could definitely see him being, I mean, there are elements of him that remind me more of Robert Griffith, the other Vikings star safety from years ago, more than Smith. But he definitely can be used in the same way that Smith is. And I think he would be a good investment, especially if he is on the undrafted list at the end of the draft. I think the Vikings would be well advised to bring him in and just see how he does and see if he can show enough in training camp to just stick around and, you know, get developed into that fourth safety spot that we now have a vacancy at, thanks to the losses of Sendejo and Iloka.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned his Grimsley's tendency to miss tackles and fly up and be a little bit too hot-headed, I guess, is for lack of a better term. That when you were saying all that, it reminded me of how we all thought Andrew Sendejo, or we all saw Andrew Sendejo play as early in his career. And then for a few years there in the middle, once Zimmer got here and kind of he formed him into a very good safety, Andrew Sendejo wasn't anything to write home about. He was just kind of filling in as best he could on a defense that wasn't as good as it should have. It wasn't very good in pass defense. And I think Zimmer's ability to form Andrew Sendejo into a guy who goes on and gets picked up by another team and has a lot of value is incredible. So I think Grimsley could play a very similar, you know, path. I believe Sendejo was also undrafted, but I think he got picked up by the Cowboys and then dropped, and then we picked him up. But just saying that Mike Zimmer has done this before with another guy who maybe has a similar skill set or at least a similar problems, I guess, to iron out.
Yeah, you're right there, and let's also look at this too. Those other two safeties we've got on the roster besides Harrison Smith, Anthony Harris and Jaron Kearse. Harris was undrafted. Kearse was a 7th-round pick. Look where they are now. I mean, Anthony Harris is slated to start alongside Harrison Smith next year. I mean, obviously, whatever it is that Zimmer and defensive backs coach Jerry Gray does with in the secondary, obviously, they just need intangibles at the safety spot to be able to do it. And I think your point's well taken. Grimsley does have similarities to Sendejo, and you know, and I know that this is something I'm putting together in my my column I'm doing on the draft, you know, on the upcoming draft. I'm saying, you know, it's like I would be very excited to see what Zimmer and Gray could do with a player of Grimsley's talents and caliber.
Yeah, I think it's definitely. I would be excited for sure as well, especially since we have that need for depth at the safety position. Okay, just transitioning to our next thing we wanted to talk about was the idea of this is a draft that is pretty stacked with high-caliber tight ends on the high end. A lot of, you know, vertical threats receiving tight ends. But I think what we've kind of come around on is that the Vikings should be looking to draft in the mid to late rounds or even undrafted, picking up some blocking tight ends to help out because they don't really have the three tight end set to move guys and help the tackles out. And I'll throw it back to you because I think you had a very apt comparison a few years ago of some guys we had. I'll throw it back to you and have you make that point.
Yeah, well, it's just I noticed a couple of years ago we had a setup where we had David Morgan and Rhett Ellison, both really good blocking tight ends, who were both on the team. And I noticed the year that we had them that we ran the ball very well that year. And I think that blocking tight ends tend to get underrated because they tend to get lost in the passing game and stuff like that. You know, obviously they don't make the highlight reel catches like a Kyle Rudolph or a Jimmy Graham would make. But when all that's said and done, I think that blocking tight ends play a very significant role in an offense that wants to run the ball like the Vikings do. And we all know that Zimmer wants to run the ball a lot. He wants to eat up that clock. He wants to keep his defense off the field. He wants to just, you know, really rattle away at the other team's defense. And as we alluded to earlier, you know, the offensive line sometimes hamstrings our ability to do that because of some of the weaknesses we have. But if we were to get blocking tight ends who could, you know, line up on either side and just really fire off the ball and just help the tackles and guards just keep the defense off the runners so the runners could, you know, get through and pick up those 5-6 yards that they need. You know, it's like that's actually a very effective game plan going forward. And again, like I said, we had that a couple of years ago when we had Rhett Ellison and David Morgan both playing as blocking tight ends on the line. And, you know, looking at into this draft, I know the Vikings have been mentioned in terms of, you know, what can they do at the tight end position and stuff like that. And I know that some names have been thrown out as blocking tight ends. Obviously, there's C.J. Conrad, the tight end from Kentucky. He's been mentioned far and wide as the best blocking tight end in this draft. He's probably going to get drafted, even though I believe you can add in here if you remember these details, but I believe he had some kind of health issue. It was like a heart problem or something that kind of dropped him, you know, a little further, you know. Yeah, because they were talking maybe fourth round, and now he's talked more fifth through seventh.
Yeah, he was unable to participate in the combine because of a heart issue, but I think the deal was that it was a known issue, that doctors had a hold on it, that it shouldn't hold him back at all. But that doesn't mean that it's not going to look bad in the eyes of scouts and drop his draft stock. Like you said, a middle-round talent who might fall to the sixth or seventh round now.
Yeah. I would be very happy, personally, if the Vikings were to pick him up. If he dropped to the sixth or seventh round and we had a pick to use, because I think that he could fill into this offense and play alongside David Morgan at the tight end spot very well. And, you know, I don't know about the rest of the Vikings fans, but I am personally okay with Kyle Rudolph being the only star we have at the tight end position and to just have his backups just be blockers, basically, because I think, like I said before, if we are a running offense, I think we need more of that. And the other name, I'm just going to throw this name out there because I know the Vikings are looking at this guy very heavily or very closely because I believe they've met with him twice, if I'm remembering the visits tracker page that I looked at, is Andrew Beck from the University of Texas at Austin. Now, we don't know a ton about him, but, I mean, apparently he plays a mixture of a tight end H-back role. So basically, he can motion from the tight end spot, go into the backfield, and then lead for Dalvin Cook or Mike Boone or whoever else is back there. So apparently he does have some limited talents as a route runner, so he's not completely oblivious. We could use him as a sneaky tight end receiving option, you know, maybe on like a 3rd and 4 or something like that. Because like I think we've done that with Morgan a couple times, where he's kind of been that sneaky reception option, you know, when we send everybody else deep and then we sneak Morgan out there and he gets the first down. So I think Beck could definitely fill that role. And I think it would be wise for the Vikings to look at him because, again, this is another element the Vikings have always had in their running game, regardless of the head coach that we've had or the system we've had. The name that obviously should come to most Vikings fans' minds is Jim Kleinsaucer. I mean, we had him through, I believe it was 4 coaching regimes. Denny Green, Mike Tice, Brad Childress, and Leslie Frazier. So, and we saw how good he was. We also had Jeff Dugan during the Childress and Frazier eras. He was really good as a tight end H-back. Obviously, I mentioned Rhett Ellison. He played that role. So I don't think it would be surprising for the Vikings to be picking up another tight end or two with the idea of looking at their blocking skills rather than their receiving skills, because we've been trying to pick up a receiving tight end late in the later rounds the last couple of years, and none of them have really panned out. Mykal Pruitt didn't pan out. Bucky Hodges didn't pan out. There's a lot of questions over whether Tyler Conklin did a good enough job to stay around last year. I think that the Vikings are preparing to move on from that and just say, okay, our backups are going to be at the tight end spot are going to be good blockers. That's what we want.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be what it is for the foreseeable future. You mentioned names that we took flyers on that really looked like they were going to pan out, Bucky Hodges and Mykal Pruitt. You know, they have the physical ability. They had the physical ability to become really good receivers, but when they couldn't find the field due to either injury or you just don't have enough value as a blocker. That's the thing about a backup tight end that I don't think everybody realizes, is that usually only the first guy is really the guy who can be a pure receiver and stay on the field all the time. Not that he shouldn't block well, you know, as well, but if you want to be a backup and find the field, you're going to have to learn how to block, and I don't think either of those guys knew how to block. So I think for the sake of the team and for the sake of the players being drafted, you hope it's a hard-nosed, blocking, hard-working kind of guy, and that's kind of a position that you can also find some good undrafteds in. I don't have anybody right off the top that I'm thinking of, but plenty of guys I'm sure have come in and played that undrafted role as tight ends and / fullbacks, because that's kind of a hybrid position in my mind. CJ Ham obviously was undrafted, and he plays for our fullback now, so I think finding either a late round pick who can block or even an undrafted guy who's willing to put in the work and become that extra tackle in the 3 tight end sets is a great strategy that I think we really should be employing.
Yes, I would agree with that because, I mean, let's face it, like I mentioned before, the Vikings have had success doing that. Have had success just having the one starting tight end who's the really good receiver, but the backups are all really good blockers. And it's like, if something's working for you and you want to run the ball anyway, why change that?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so we'll get into next. Second to last point here is we wanted to talk about Michael Walker, receiver from Boston College. Same place as Andy Isabella and a few other people that we've mentioned. But I wrote a draft profile on Isabella a few weeks ago. Very shifty guy, has some, you know, ability to make people miss, but he's only 5'9". You talked about, while we were, you know, discussing preparing for the show, Michael Walker is 6 feet tall, but he's got a little bit of return ability, which I think is what what the team is looking for in a receiver. So I'll pass it back over to you just because you know a little more about Walker.
Yeah, well, I mean, I looked over what some of the game tape from Walker over, especially this past season, just looking over. I mean, he is very similar to Andy Isabella in a couple ways. I mean, obviously, he's a little taller than Isabella, you know, at 6 feet, but he looks very similar to him. I mean, actually, I know this is how I've ended up describing him to some people. It's like he's definitely a slot receiver. He's not quite tall enough to play outside consistently, but the way that he played, it reminded me, it was very reminiscent of a Wes Welker, Julian Edelman type of player, with an added element to it though, and that was, it seemed to me as he played that he had a very Jordy Nelson type flair to his play. You know, he was able to, you know, suddenly zoom out and just suddenly grab balls, and he was able to just, you know, suddenly break out of nowhere and just do good work. He was able to shake a defensive back really good, like Nelson used to do, and stuff like that. So, you know, I look at that, and I think Walker's an undrafted gem that whoever gets him, and I really hope it's the Vikings, I think he's going to be a gem in that regard, because he has a lot of different abilities that I think could be very effective for any team that picks him up. And the one thing that he has that Isabella doesn't, actually, is that Walker's already got plenty of experience returning kicks. And if you look at some of the game tape of Walker returning kicks, he's a very explosive returner. I remember looking at him and I'm like, wow, it's like he just zoomed right through that hole. It's like that hole didn't look like it was going to be open very long, but it was only open for like 2-3 seconds and he was through it already. You know, it's like, so he's definitely got the return skills. And let's face it, the Vikings are in desperate need of return men now, because now we don't have Cordarrelle Patterson or Marcus Sherrills any longer. And another thing that I believe Zimmer mentioned this a couple of years ago, I don't think he's mentioned it recently, but Zimmer mentioned how good special teams play and good return ability was very important to a defensively oriented team, because your defense stops an opposing team's offense. You need a good kick returner and punt returner who can get another 10, 20 yards and make it easier for your offense to get into field goal range or to score touchdowns. And, you know, if you remember back to 2016, you know, yeah, the season didn't turn out the way we wanted, but if you look at when we were doing really, really well, part of that had to do with how well Patterson and Sherrills were returning the ball on special teams. So I just look at Walker and I'm like, you know, he's a young guy. He's got speed. He's obviously got return ability. If he's undrafted, you know, I think the Vikings would be fools not to at least make him an offer, because, you know, it's like, I think that he could really fill that return position that we now need filled in order for our offense to actually capitalize on our defense's stance. I mean, obviously, there's a reason Walker is not getting drafted, because, you know, he's got, apparently, he does have a fumbling issue of some kind. I did not see a ton of examples of that, but I've heard that occasionally he does get a little sloppy holding the ball. And the other thing, and this is something that he seems to have a tendency to do now, but I think it's very fixable with good coaching, is the fact that when I looked at some of his highlight reel catches, I was like, well, it's like that may work in the college game, but it's not going to work very well in the NFL, because he came down with only 1 foot in bounds. And it was like, and I'm just looking at that, I'm like, okay, pal, you're going to have to learn to put both feet down in bounds when you make a catch, and to be aware of where you are on the field when you make that catch. So, you know, so obviously he has stuff to work on in that regard, and that's, those two things are probably the main reason he's getting pushed down to the undrafted level. Not to mention the fact, let's face it, maybe you can correct me here if I'm wrong, but I don't recall any slot receivers really getting picked in the first round lately, and I don't think we've had terribly many in second or third rounds either. I believe Welker was a late round pick, and I think Edelman was fifth or sixth round.
Yeah, it's usually a late round guy or an undrafted free agent who finds his way onto the field. But yeah, I think this is a thing that I've said about a few guys that we've talked about, a few receivers that we've talked about, but I think a guy like Walker, who has the physical tools and the ability to become either a great slot receiver or maybe even play a little bit outside, not terribly a terrible amount. I think Isabella, if you're comparing him straight up to Andy Isabella, Isabella has way less of a shot to be on the outside just because at 5'9", it's nearly impossible that he's going to be able to win any balls out there. But I'll say this again about a receiver, is that I think if Michael Walker gets brought in, he has an incredible opportunity to learn from two of the best in the game at route running and making some of those tough catches on the sideline, getting those feet down. And Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs are both here for Diggs is here for, you know, after the extension, is here for the foreseeable future. You know they want Thielen to get an extension and lock him up and make him a career Viking just because of his story and everything. There's almost no way that the front office lets him leave. But to be behind two of the NFL's best, I think it gives you the opportunity to pick some of these late-round guys and develop them into the great players that they have the potential to be. Similar in a way to how the Patriots draft or pick up undrafted guys and then develop them into really good players, or at least look really good players, because of Tom Brady. I think they can learn a lot of skills from Thielen and Diggs and then also benefit from Thielen and Diggs on the field and become a really great receiver with some of these lower round picks, so we don't have to get in a situation where we spend a first round pick to try to pick up a guy who's going to be your next great receiver. You don't have to reach for your Laquan Treadwells and your Troy Williamsons if you, in this era right now, draft and develop through some of the guys who are on the roster now who are just incredible receivers who themselves were undrafted and fourth-round picks.
Yeah, and actually, interesting point there. If you look, who have been the Vikings' most productive receivers the past couple of years? It's all been the guys who were mid to late round or undrafted. I mean, you mentioned Diggs and Thielen, but let's not forget Jarius Wright, fourth round pick. Chad Beattie, undrafted. There was another one that his name's slipping my mind at the moment, but we've gotten a lot of mileage out of our later round picks and out of undrafted free agents in the receiving core. And I think Walker has the chance to kind of fill that role. I mean, I would love, let's just throw out a hypothetical scenario here. Can you imagine a four receiver set on the field when we have to get like a third and 15 or something like that? We've got Diggs and Thielen on the outside, and then we got Chad Beebe and Michael Walker crossing across the middle of the field. I mean, can you believe that? It's like that would be impressive to watch. I would be very excited about an offense that would look that way.
Yeah, and I think it's even more interesting when you think about how the league is moving away from the onside kick and the idea of possibly handing the ball to the offense and making them get a fourth and 15. To have a receiving core that is so good at so many levels, It gets exciting when you think about it, because you could Connor was, I think, the one who wrote the article about the NFL killing the offside kick, excuse me. But something like the percentage dropped in half once they removed running starts and whatever. Can you imagine, you know, the possibility that you can convert one out of four times on a fourth and 15 to essentially give yourself an onside kick and the ball back? That's it gives you so much more ability to win some close important games, knowing that you can pick up those longer fourth down situations. Just something I thought of because thinking about the idea of them removing the onside kick, and I know some people don't like it and everything, but I think if you can build a team that is able to pick up, you know, chunks of yards with just their excellent route running, their ability to make catches, I think we're going to see a lot more of that, just because that will become so much more important as part of the game with the removal of the onside kick.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, and let's add another element to that too. I mean, you mentioned the onside kick and turning into a 4th and 15, possibly, and all that. Well, I could add this in the sense that one of the things that we see with, I mean, well, let me pose this question: when you think New Orleans Saints offense, what's the first thing that you think of?
Besides how much I hate Sean Payton?
Well, I'm talking about more offensive strategy. You know, like what offensive strategy do you associate with the New Orleans Saints offense?
Goodness. I suppose they're... I want to say either their receiving backs or just Drew Brees' ability to make plays when they need them, like on 3rd and 4th down.
Okay, I mean, that's kind of along the same lines I was thinking, except I was thinking more general. Like, I always think of the Saints offense as a passing offense.
Oh, yeah.
I've never really considered them to be a run-heavy offense. But at the same time, one of the brilliant things about Sean Payton, you know, and I hate to say it because, you know, obviously, I mean, we're all really sick of the Saints. But one of the brilliant things about Sean Payton in his coaching technique is that he's made the running game good enough so that when he has to go with it, he can. And he's done that, you know, with, you know, even though, like I said, you don't think of the running game when you think of the Saints, but they've had Mark Ingram, they've had Alvin Kamara, they've had Tarvarius Kadett, they've had Chris Ivory, Pierre Thomas. They've been able to get it done. Well, when you look at the Vikings offense, the thing that most people think of there is the running game. Well, it would be very nice if, like the Saints, except the other way around, if we had the ability to really, you know, if we needed to get into a shootout, and I know some people were saying, like, you know, why do we want to go away from the run game and all that? Well, let's face it. Sometimes we're going to face teams that, you know, we're going to get into a shootout, like last year, the Rams game. You know, we were in a shootout, whether we liked it or not. We had to get away from the running game. We didn't have a choice, you know, and it would be very nice if we could have a receiving core that we feel comfortable enough to get into a shootout with if we needed to. Obviously, our top priority would be running the ball, but if the game got out of hand and we had no choice but to, you know, sling the ball around, you know, I want to have a receiving core that we feel confident enough that we can do that with.
Yeah, and I think it's also, you know, you mentioned getting into a shootout. Most people would say, well, you need a great quarterback to win that, but I think we already talked about it with Cousins not being here after the next couple of years. More than likely, you build what you can build and you try to build the receiving core to be a great passing offense and maybe the offensive line, hopefully, fingers crossed, in the next year or two. And then you slot in a quarterback who could do well enough until you find the next guy, or if you find the next guy, luckily. But I think you build what you can, and building that receiving core through the draft is something that you can do right now with the amazing players you've got in front, the amazing guys you have to mentor new and younger players. I'm going to move on to our last point here because we're going a little bit long. Not that I haven't enjoyed every single minute of it, but just for the sake of our listeners, I'm sure they don't like to hear our voice for too long. The last point we want to talk about is a guy that I'm looking to write a profile on, but we don't really know a terrible amount about him yet. You just said something about him a couple days ago, and then I went and found a highlight video of him, and that is Minnesota State Mankato's kicker/punter, Casey Bednarski. Whew, that's a tough one. We'll have to shorten his name down if he comes on the team, but he looks like an incredibly good kicker, and he punts, so he's got a lot of versatility to his kickoffs. I'll try not to take too many points away from you. The last thing I'll say is he has a highlight where he hits a 63-yard field goal to go into halftime against a team kicking outside in the wind, and I'm sure that helped, but if the wind was with him. But he just looks incredibly amazing. I'll pass it back over to you because I know you had some good comparisons of players that you thought he looked like.
Yeah, I remember looking at those same videos. You shared them with me, and they were – I was impressed as well. I mean, he obviously knows what he's doing. He obviously has a kind of a flow to his technique of kicking. And you know, the guys that he kind of reminded me of, build wise, just the way, just how big he is and so on. He reminds me a lot of the longtime Raider kicker Sebastian Janikowski. He's got the big body mass. I mean, like his legs kind of look, you know, kind of look big and thick like Janikowski's did. And it just seems to me like he would have the long standing range and power to just keep going forward for a pretty significant career here in the NFL. And the other guy he kind of reminded me of was a guy that I think some of the older Vikings fans will probably remember is the guy that we had serving as our punter for a number of years, and that was Mitch Berger. Because when I looked at how Bednarski handled his kickoffs and how he played on the kickoff return team and stuff like that, he reminded me a lot of Berger in the way that he just approached the game. That he just, you know, he would just boot it real deep. He would, you know, he looks like that he's really good at directionally placing his kicks, which, let's face it, when you're facing a team with a really good return game, that's kind of important. You know, you need to have the ability to place the ball, not put it out of bounds, but put it, you know, where the return man's options are limited. And I think Bednarski has, I think he's well developed his ability to the extent that he has already. I don't think that he's perfect yet, but I think he's developed it very well so far. So I think that he's a guy who the Vikings have to look at very seriously. And I know they're going to have competition for his services if they want to bring him in, because apparently this 63-yard field goal that he kicked and some of these other talents that he has has gotten the attention of a couple other teams that have some kicking concerns. The two teams I heard thrown out there were the Bengals and the Bills. Apparently they've wanted to go talk to Bednarski and basically say it's like we want to bring you in. We want to just, you know, see if you have what it takes to be in the league. Throw in the fact that, you know, you mentioned he's the kicker from Minnesota State Mankato. Well, that's where Thielen was from. So, you know, I was like, there we have another connection. He's a local kid. He has a rags to riches story. I know some people were talking about, you know, he started out as a pizza delivery man before he was able to get in and wow people as a kicker. You know, it's like he's got another story that fits the Thielen and Sherrill's type of, you know, rags to riches Minnesotan stories. And that's why I think that I would be very surprised if the Vikings did not make him a very serious offer coming out of the draft. I mean, we know that they're looking to improve the kicking game. They've been looking at multiple kickers. And, you know, again, it sounds like they've had a meeting with Bednarski. I would fully expect them to make an offer to him. I think it's going to be up to Bednarski whether he accepts it or not.
Yeah, and I think we both talked about, you know, we hope we see Bednarski and Emmett Carpenter, both of them, we hope that we see very serious offers from the Vikings, just because they're local guys who we want to succeed in the league, and we'd love to see them on our team. But the last point I'll make about Bednarski is just I don't think his versatility as like a kicker and a punter, those things would probably often be overlooked. But I think. To have the ability, we've seen some injuries in special teams in the last few years where people just have to come in, they have to punt or they have to kick on short notice. Janikowski was injured for, I think, a playoff game last year.
That's correct.
And similarly, we've seen plenty of punters who get injured and then they've got to bring in the kicker to try to punt and it doesn't work out well. It looks like they've never, you know, touched a football in any way other than just kicking it off a tee. Yeah, I think the versatility is something that really brings his stock up a lot, but I hope they don't have to pay too much for him, his services. I hope he gives a little bit of maybe a hometown Adam Thielen discount.
Yeah, you could always hope for that. I mean, obviously there's a reason he's not being drafted. I mean, obviously there's probably elements of his game that still need improvement, but it speaks to you as to how highly some teams think of him that it's not just the Vikings looking at him.
Right, exactly. All right, so that's gonna do it for us today. We've gone for about an hour and 25 minutes of just a great, great content. I think we dug a little bit deeper today. kind of tried to avoid the first round discussion that we tend to fall into. But this has been a really, really great time, Grant. Just to give listeners an idea of what the schedule for the next few weeks is, next week I'm hoping to get a mock draft special kind of together. Kevin, I'm hoping to get Kevin Gendron back on. Viking Spin Jason, I'm hoping we can work out something where he can get on. And Grant, after your Vike-Minded Thoughts column comes out, if we can work out a schedule to get all three of you on, that would be, you know, like, great. And I think we could have a really great episode next week, just going round through round and guessing at who the Vikings are targeting and kind of all of our own mock drafts. I think that would be really fun. And then the week following that, the week of April 20th, I get the incredible pleasure of meeting over Skype through with just a Vikings great, Chad Greenway. We're going to get him on here and talk to him about the whole draft process from the player's perspective and moving from college to the pros and some of his favorite stories and some of his favorite teammates, you know, their first days and everything. It's just going to be such a fun time to get to talk to him. And then finally, we're going to do another episode right before the draft, try to get as many people on here as we can, just a final little hurrah of celebrating what we've made here, and then also just talking about what we think the Vikings are going to do in the draft. In you know, it'll literally be hours from the time we record probably to the time that it's released, and then another few hours from that the draft will start. So it's going to be an exciting month, exciting few weeks coming up. Grant, thank you so much for being here today.
No, thank you, Kirby. I look forward to working with you guys more as we get. I mean, the draft is always one of the most exciting times of the NFL season, in my opinion.
Yeah, mine too, and it's why we started this program. But I just like to thank everybody again for listening, everybody for sharing. If you want to find us, we're on, you know, if you want to share our stuff, Vikings Territory Twitter, Purple Territory Radio is the big one that we're supposed to be pushing. That is our new podcast site, where it's kind of the home of all our podcasts. So if you want to share things, share it from there, please. But if you just want to share it in general, just do that. Excuse me for a second. I'm so sorry about that. I had a bunch of stuff stuck in my throat. But thank you all for listening today. This has been a great episode. I hope to see you all again, or be able to have you all listen again next week. That's all for today.